Blog Talk Radio.
Alright, Beth. Yeah. Walk with me.
Come take a walk with me, grab my hand. Let me school you, little bro, make you understand. You gotta run the streets to become a man. Just stay in your own lane, you can buy some land. I see the fire in your eyes. Don't fall into the trap, in the trap you can die. So many soldiers stand down in the sky. Pay attention to the vibe, that's what's keeping you alive. Have patience, just talk to me. Get out of line, you get chalked for free. I won't let you fall if it's up to me. And they say misery like companies. Don't let them put you down on companies. You know I got your back, you look up to me. It's okay to show love, but cautiously. It's okay for men to cry, but not normally. Let's go.
Yeah. Walk with me.
Relax, nigga, take a seat. You be acting all hard, you ain't from the street. Got a good family and somewhere to sleep. Nigga, I was house to house with nowhere to eat. I don't get you, niggas. These shoes can't fit you, niggas. You can play it off. Looking in your eyes, see you mask off. Pretending to be a G until they pull your card. Yo, you still young, don't take the road where I came from. Ain't nothing there. Couple of holes, a sipping beer. Switching up, pose with the pole, ain't playing fair. Get up off that circle, you ain't earning shit with them squares. Before you get caught up and then happen to take a dare. Spider senses tingling, feeling all in the air. And keep God close with the post and make a prayer.
Yo, this record for all your loved ones, man. Don't ever steer them in the wrong direction. Being real is a form of respect. Respect yourself.
Let's go, man. Being real is being genuine. Yourself.
Shout out, Young Swiss.
Again, I know the time is now, I gotta do official. I'm down on one knee, I hope you need a tissue. Do you take me for eternity? And make your pinky promise that you never leave. Even when you're mad at me, just don't up and leave. The future is scary, I don't wanna see. My life without you will be a tragedy. When I wake up in the mornings, you won't wanna see. I'm sorry, babe, there's so much that I wanna say. First, let me ask you, will you marry me?
Oh my God.
God. I'm seriously about to cry right now. Are you serious?
Baby, you know that I love you. I want you to know that I love you.
I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Keeping It Real with Jay Sean Online Radio Podcast. It's Friday, September 10th, 2021. I hope everybody's feeling good this evening. Seems like I can't wait till Friday come to get on the air with you. I might have to start doing another show during the week. But how everybody doing tonight? I'm feeling pretty good tonight. Had a long day, but for some reason I couldn't get this show off my mind. It's almost like the most anticipated show that I had like in the past year. Not anticipated because of certain circumstances or consequences. It's just sometimes when you get the feeling, it's like you know. It's when your conscience is talking to you. And you know, and you always have to go with your conscience, and that's how I feel tonight. I had a phone call earlier from a close friend of mine, and he called me up, and he was kind of put me in like a damper mood tonight, because when you hear a grown man crying, like you know something is serious. Because that don't happen too much. And he called me up and he was, I could tell something was wrong in his voice. I said, "What's wrong, brother? What's going on?" I couldn't really make out what he was saying in between the sobs. And when he kind of slowed down and got his voice right, he was like, he wanted to ask me something. I was like, "You can ask me anything. What's going on?" He wanted to know what did I really think of him. Did I think he was a type of person that freeloads off of people? Did I think of him as a user, a manipulator, a freeloader? Now, all these feelings that he was asking me is because for the last month, he'd been staying with somebody because he fell into a certain situation, and he'd been staying with them. So I guess everything hit the fan, and it came to a point maybe where sometimes you kind of wear out your welcome. It could be with a friend. It could be with a loved one. It could be with anybody. But it made me think to myself, because the brother is a real honorable dude. He's a straight up, loving, caring, take care of his family, you know, love his mother, support his children. You know, he do the best that he could do in the society we in today. But it made me think that you could do so much in this world, and you could take 1 month of laying on somebody's couch or sleeping on somebody's floor, and that could summarize your whole well-being, your whole persona and everything in 30 days. And I had to really do the knowledge and, you know, and try to think what to say, because I'm an uplifting type of brother, you know. I've never been one to kick people when they down. I'm a person that believes it's not how many times you fall, it's how many times you get up. And you only need one time to win. You can take as many losses as you want, but it only take one time, just one time, to win, to get where you want to get and go where you want to go. And I tried to speak as positive as I could to him, you know, to uplift his spirits and, you know, let him know that the man, the type of man he really was. Because sometimes, believe it or not, sometimes men, we need to hear that, you know. We need to hear that we're doing a good job, you know. We need to hear that all of our hard work and blood, sweat and tears, that it's being noticed, that it's being appreciated. And, you know, I tried to let him know, you know, I knew him about 8 or 9 years, and I tried to let him know, you know, like that, you know, like you here for a reason. You here for a reason, and you here for a purpose. And everything happens for a reason. And after every setback, there's a comeback. And I just thought that was fitting for tonight's show. For every setback, there's a comeback. And later on, you might find out just what I'm talking about. And anyway, me and the brother, we talked a little bit more, and I kind of lifted spirits and everything, and we got off the phone, and he was feeling like he was supposed to be feeling, you know. And I just thought to myself, how many people go through that in the world? How many people make a bad choice and it lands them in a bad situation? And how will people look at you, who accept you, when you try to come back? And you do come back. But how do people look at you? How will they see you? Will they draw up their own persona, their own image of you? Will they read the book by the cover? Or what do you got to do to let people know that it's not what you do that make you who you are? No, that's not it. A lot of people used to think that about me. They used to think, like, what you do is what you are. No. I did a lot of bad things in my life, too. Would I do them again? I mean, I would hope to say I wouldn't. But I wouldn't bash anybody that was doing things that I did. I would just try to let them know. A lot of people ask me, Jay, what would you do if your daughters became strippers and dancers? What would you tell them? And I would never try to deter anybody or turn anybody against anything, but I would let them know the repercussions. I would let them know the consequences. I would let them know that it's penalties for everybody's ways and actions. I would let them know about karma, and I would let them know about the system. I would definitely do that. And I would let them know what I lost from my times in the streets hustling. I would let them know, because everybody know what I did. And I say it all the time on the air. Everybody knows. And and people often ask me, like, what did you lose? I mean, I lost time with my family. I lost time with my loved ones. I dedicated 20 years of my life to a profession where most people end up in insane asylums, dying from diseases, or locked away in prison. But Allah, God, he just seen it that I'm here and I'm able to talk to you. And I'm able to speak wise words from knowledge, from experiences that I have, because everybody know that knowledge is something gained from actual experiences. And I don't know, I just wanted to tell everybody that today, because it kind of touched me a little bit, you know, when my man called me up. And I'm just saying this because it might be somebody out there going through this right now. You know, it's never let the situation that you're in beat you up. Never let your circumstances consume you to the point where you want to give up. Never let somebody make you believe that you nothing. Because everybody got gifts. You just got to find your gift. You got to find your right path. You got to find your right destination. You got to find the right thing to suit you. Everybody got a gift from God. You just got to find out what it is. I didn't write my first book until 2008. I was in a car accident and I was laying up and I used to always tell people stories of my life. And everybody used to always tell me, Jay, you should write a book. You should write a book. And I used to listen, but I never paid attention to it. And then I was in a car accident and I couldn't really do anything. And I said, let me write a book. And I wrote my life story in 2008, The Patterson Pimp. And it just happened to be that it was the right book at the right time in the right place. It hadn't been a book about pimps in years. And I took the book and I sent it to different prisons, every people I knew. I just sent the book to different for free to a whole bunch of people. I would ask people on the streets, you got somebody incarcerated in your family? You think they might want a book? And I would mail the book to them. And I sent my books to different people that I didn't know. And it just turned out, before I knew it, the book was all over the world. Like an overnight sensation. Because I had the right novel at the right time in the right place. And that's how life is. You just have to find yourself in the right place at the right time with the right material. And you know what the old saying is, behind every good man is a good woman. I can't leave that out because that's a true statement. Regardless of what you think or what you feel, and you know everybody know I get on the love, everybody know I get on the air and I call myself Mr. Fuck Love and I claim to be the self-appointed relationship guru. But you know, everybody know that I know behind every good man is a good woman. And everybody know that I'm up here sometime, I'm just an intelligent person acting crazy. Because a crazy person can't act intelligent, but an intelligent person can act crazy. And I just wanted to share that because that was just on my mind. So I just wanted to get it off my mind. We got a hell of a show tonight for you. I was talking to my guest behind, you know, a little while ago. Earlier and yesterday, one day like that, and I was telling him, you know, and we was talking about being nervous, and actually, I'm kind of nervous. Some of the people on my team, they was like, Jay, don't drink tonight, because y'all know I get crazy, and I be drinking, and I get crazy on here, and they were like, don't drink tonight, Jay, don't drink tonight. So I'm not going to drink tonight. Well, I might have one shot, I'm not going to lie. Even though one shot might lead to two shots, might lead to three shots. But as of right now, I haven't had anything. I'm sober, sober, sober. Because my platform is to educate. It's to further people education. Sometimes we out here and we talking about cheating women. Sometimes we out here and we talking about cheating men. And sometimes we out here talking about threesomes. And sometimes we out here talking about, I might talk about anything. What's the proper way to clean a vagina? Or, you know, one week we might be talking about, the list goes on and on and on and on. But then sometimes we have serious topics. And sometimes we got serious people. It's a time to play, and it's a time to be serious. And tonight, it's a time to be serious. I hope everybody can hear me out there pretty good. Hope I did all the spelling and the bios and the synopsis correct. But tonight's guest is really, this show is really important to me. And like I said, maybe like 2 weeks ago, my guest tonight, it's not like a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend or nobody didn't call me or email me and tell me, Jay, interview this person for me or nothing like this. No, this is a friend of mine. This is somebody we done chilled together. We done hung together. We know each other. And that mean a lot to me that I could have him on my show. And I'm sure it mean a lot to him that I invited him to my show. So it's equal love. It's equal affection. And that's why the show was so important to me. And I want everything to go right, and I want everything to go smooth. And I'm sure later on, I want everybody to pay close attention to the brother's story. I really do. Because it could be somebody out there right now, a son, a brother, a nephew, a cousin, a husband, is walking down the same path. So you never know. Listening is knowledge. It's something you might hear tonight on my show that might just make you make the right turn off of that edge. Because you know a lot of people be on that edge, and a lot of people be at that point in their life when they can either go to the right or they could go to the left. So hopefully tonight the brothers say a couple of things tonight that just might make you go, you know, might make you go to the right path. Because shit is real out here. And when you in these streets, the shit is real. Just like they say everybody in church ain't a Christian. Everybody in prison ain't a criminal. And a lot of people there is not supposed to be there. I was reading earlier, it was like 39% of people in the world is behind bars. That was like a survey from 2015 or something. So that's 576,000 people. And 25% of the prisoners, which is 364,000, is in there for nonviolent crimes. Now, how many people know what nonviolent crimes is? You know, nonviolent crimes. Traffic tickets, welfare fraud, what else? Taxes. I guess you could say larceny, maybe in the first degree, and stuff like that. But the real thing that people need to know and understand that the Republicans and the Democrats, they know that mass incarceration failed. They know it. But it's a game that they play. So they keep people locked up. And why do they do that? Because if they know people get out, they're going to lose. I was reading somewhere earlier, it said something like, if the government let people out of jail when they were supposed to, they would lose $20 billion. $20 billion a year. Now, with that $20 billion, they could get 270,000 more cops or 360,000 more probation officers or 327,000 more school teachers. But it's all organized slavery. And that's what we need to understand. And who is the target? And I hate to talk black and white, but we all know. We all know who the target is. And the shit even gets more realer if you Google and you find out that you can find out it's people in jail doing life for nonviolent crimes. It's people in jail right now doing life for I got some shit right here. Ronald Washington, 48 years old, serving life in Angola prison for shoplifting two pair of Michael Jordan jerseys from Foot Action. And they played with the numbers or something, and he said they was on sale for under $45, and they said they wasn't on sale. And it just was crazy. I got an important call. Let me see. I'm going to see if I can go to a song real quick. We're going to go to a song real quick, and I'll call you everybody back. Real quick. Matter of fact, we'll be back with the guests after this song. Let's see what's going on. 1 second, ladies and gentlemen.
www.tonezones.com.
Girl, period. Who that girl? No question marks why you do that, girl. No exclamation, we've been through that, girl. Need no explanation why the ex keep chasing. Call him up and let him know that his seat's been taken. So in love, full of fun, comma, impatience. I knew this would happen, told you to focus on graduating. Black sister 2 months away from a college education. In love, what I teach and how I treat her, use a keeper. Didn't Kenny tell you not to fall in love with a dreamer? She a freak like me, call her Redina. That's lust, yo. Hyphen, no wiping, but we can up, yo. She call me Mike Jack. I just beat it, I don't fuck slow. She call me right back. I had to make a play to cut, though. Her girl's hating on the low, but they just cut, though. What I was playing, she was in it for the gusto.
No, I'm not perfect, no. Made my mistakes, no. But all I want is love and unconditional.
Yes, I never knew how love felt, but I could tell you how that hurt feels. Too late to shuffle now, the cards dealt, and I played my hand and got a raw deal. No reneging now, seen her when I was downtown in sneaker zone with my little man copping them Yeezy phones. They hugged each other as we ran along, our eyes met. Told her shit, she left the house, don't feel like home. Luther on repeat, they say to each his own. Nobody's perfect, Missy E up on the ringtone. I'm about to wipe that, you shouldn't be alone. I don't care if the whole world know, put me on speakerphone. Them birds said I wasn't worth it when the bread was just crumbs and the music wasn't working. Now your shoes is Jimmy Choo's and your bag stays broken. And them superficial girls are still lurking. It's so hurting. Why? But they soul searching. Through all my wrongs, I found the right person. Cause I know we always gon' be fly. All up in that coochie like an old BG. Why love?
No, I'm not perfect, no. I made my mistakes, no. But all I want is love unconditional. Love unconditional. I don't deserve it, no. But it would be worth it all. All I want is love unconditional. Love unconditional. Yeah, yeah.
Welcome back. Oh, man, that was a first right there. I'm sorry about that, everybody. One of my children, mothers, kept calling my phone back to back to back, so I got kind of nervous. I thought it was an emergency. Then I'm texting her, and she telling me, never mind. Ain't that some shit? Anyway, I got my guest on the line now. I'm tired of talking. So let me it's 8:30. It's time for an interview. I want to give a shout out to all my brothers out there listening for 17th Dab. I got a hit up from Kayshawn, Nayshawn, and Just Die. Peace to y'all brothers. And all my other brothers, God from Brooklyn and everybody else out there listening. The phone line just lit up. So we want to go into my guest tonight. I guess I really don't even have to give him no more introduction. Everybody is long and waiting. You here with me, brother?
Yeah, peace. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Got to talk a little bit louder.
Okay. You can hear me good, though? Can you hear me good?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you good. I usually give everybody a long introduction, but I got a crazy phone call. I got kind of nervous in that. It kind of threw me off,
right.
So that's why I brought you right on in. So what should
absolutely.
I call you first? What should I call
I
you?
Mean, yeah, you know, Malad, DMs, whatever y'all want to, you know my name is my name. You know what I'm saying? We you know, when you family, you know what I'm saying, and the people who love you, and they call you by your respective name, you can't deny it. You know what I'm saying?
So, right.
You know whether you calling me Derek D. Hands, Malai, Minhaj, you know what I'm saying. I'm that person. You know what I'm saying. I don't run from who I am. Man.
I'll make sure so I call you D. Hands. That way I know I won't slip up and call you nothing else. You know, but D. Hands. How you feeling tonight?
Man, I'm like for real. Like It's a vibe that I can't even, it's such a good vibe that I can't even begin to express to you, like, how excited I am, most importantly for you, like, to see you doing your thing and to see, you know, and then to sit here and listen to you, you know, elaborate on such a conscious, conversation that you was having with us, you know what I'm saying, and building from the perspective of, you know, men. And when we hurt as men, you know what I'm saying?
It's right.
Like, yo, you know, that was a really beautiful build. And it was extraordinary for me to take in because I can identify with that. You know what I'm saying? In a lot of ways.
That's why I kind of brought it up because it kind of like tapped into, what tonight's show was, you know what I mean? Because a lot of people could go through things and a lot of people tend to judge you by certain things,
yeah.
Right? And they don't really know. They don't really know the real
right.
you. I once heard
right.
that, like in certain situations, if you just took 5 seconds or just 10 seconds
mm-hmm.
just to, you know, to think about it, it would be so much
mm-hmm.
different in this world. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's how
mm-hmm.
I heard. But anyway, We're gonna talk like I was talking to my brother earlier, Just Die. He was, you know what I mean? That's my biggest critic. So he said, Jay, you gotta talk like you don't know the person for an hour. So I'm gonna talk like I don't know you for an hour. All right.
Yeah. That might be a little difficult because we come from the real blood of the concrete. You know what I'm saying? Dudes don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, first and foremost, like, you know, I just want to say Bismillah, and which is in Arabic, in translation means in the name of Allah, because everything that we do and everything that I'm able to do is only transferred to me through the means of Allah, God. And I'm grateful for the opportunity, and I give all praise to Him. Alhamdulillah, I give all praise and thanks to Allah, God, for allowing me to even have the breath of this life at this present moment to, you know. Hello?
Oh, yeah, that was my bad. I told you earlier, anything might happen on this show. Like, I was saying, earlier I said, don't let nothing go wrong tonight, and already I had a phone call, and already I hit the wrong button for the music, but that's the devil. Go ahead, brother, I'm going to cut you off.
But, that's definitely, but, you know, like, really, though, you know, I give praise to Allah and thanks to Allah for the opportunity, God, to be here, you know, speaking with you, speaking to our audience and all the many brothers that we grew up with and we come up with first. And, you know, I want to give love to my mom, you know what I'm saying, my mother, Ms. Brenda Hansford, and my father, Mr. Johnny Hansford. But, you know, yo, man, like, I'm just really grateful to you to give me this opportunity to speak to the people. You know, I don't know if a lot of people are aware, but, you know, second chances in life are not common. You know what
right.
I'm saying? There's a lot of people, you know, that haven't had the opportunity to have a second chance.
Right.
I have, and I'm doing the best I can to make every bit of this opportunity something that, you know, not only benefits me, but the people I love who are even distant to me. You know what I'm saying? So I work real hard at striving to, you know, live a life that I've always desired to live. You know, even growing up when I was a young man, I came from a single-parent home, but I always had both of my parents in my life. And then I also had my family in my life. But, you know, what a lot of people don't know about Paterson, New Jersey, Paterson, New Jersey is a rough place to live. It's a rough place to live, man. Not rough in the sense of where, you know what I'm saying, there's so much that you can't get ahead. But Paterson is a city that deals with real men. I've never met a place that I've been in a lot of places. I've been, you know, a lot of places, man. I've traveled a lot of cities. And Paterson, for some reason, is one of them places, man, you just got to be a real man to get through there. You can't just walk through Paterson and finagle and think you're going to, you know, get by. It's just not that kind of city. It's like a city that, you know, that produces real men. And so that, you know, it's like you confront it in a lot of ways. And when I was a youth, you know what I'm saying, growing up, you know, I grew up, of course, on 17th Ave when I was young. 17th Ave, I was like about 7 years old, playing football with the big guys on the block. And that's how I really became, you know, close to a lot of the brothers I grew up with on 17th Ave. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not going to mention any names because I don't want to leave anybody out because everybody knows that they are loved. You know what I'm saying? But we all, you know, was very young and we were all into football and basketball. And we hung out together. And then I moved from 17th Ave to Oak Street, 124 Oak Street, by School 15, Roberto Clemente Park area over there, off of Graham Avenue, Oak Street up at the top. So which used to be the old East Side. And so, but my family always strived to give me the best. You know, I could recall thinking that I was semi-rich because my grandmother worked for AT&T. You know what I'm saying? And I used to be able to call her on her line. Like, I could connect her when I would dial 911 or I could dial 411. She'd pick up the phone. I could hit 0. My grandmother would pick up, or one of the operators would pick up the phone and direct my call to Ms. Montez Hammond. And I used to feel like, wow, you know, this is crazy. My grandmother, you know, she directs everybody's phone calls, so I'm the man. But my family always tried to give me the best. Now, growing up in a single-parent home, you know, I didn't have brothers and sisters, but I had my cousins who are like my brothers and sisters. At that time, I was my mother's only child, and I was my father's only child. And later on in life, my father did produce other children, my sisters, and my little brother, who I love very dearly. And I'm very close to all three of them. And but my sister in my youthful days was my sister Rhonda. And in my youthful days was my brother was my brother Todd. And then my little sister was my sister Leslie. Now these people, and then my little brother was my cousin Justice. Okay. Now all these people that I'm talking about, they my cousins, but we grew up in as brothers and sisters. So for me, I was like always fed the best in life. And I grew up around, you know, all types of people, man. From Portuguese people to Italians to Caucasians, and I lived right up there by Eastside. You know what I'm saying? Which is, you know what I'm saying? And people don't know that about Patterson. Like, people think, you know, Eastside was, yeah, people think Eastside was just populated by, you know, Puerto Ricans and blacks. Nah. You had Little Italy over there. You had Portugal community over there. And you had a lot of Italians, you know, in that area. And you had a lot of Dominicans.
I don't mean to cut you off, but that's what I remember what I was telling you earlier. I was telling you earlier that I told you that I met you from Shireen.
Yeah.
You remember I was telling you? And because he had left from school 20 and he went to school 24.
Right.
And then, you know, but we would talk on the phone periodically. And he would tell me about you before I ever met you.
Yeah, right.
You know, you don't mind if I say what he was telling me, do you?
No, I don't. We here to speak truth, man. We ain't shadow boxing here, man.
he was telling me like, yo, Jay, you got to meet my friend. You know, because I guess you and him had got friends in school 24. And he was like, yo, he is the king. He the king of the Latin women. I was like, huh? Like, like what you mean? He's like, Jay, this guy is the king. he the king with the Hispanic women. And like, I want people to know what I'm saying. Like back in them days in the early 80s and all that, we couldn't even talk to Spanish women. We couldn't even talk to him. So for a brother to be able to pull a Spanish woman or even talk to a Spanish, that was like a Ku Klux Klan having lunch with a Black Panther. You know what I mean?
Before I even met you,
I looked up to you because I was like, "Yo, this brother, he could pull Spanish women." You know, what I mean, like, "Yo, that's unheard of."
And I didn't know how to speak Spanish.
You did?
Man, all I knew how to say was "Cómo está linda," you know, "Cómo está mami." What's his name? That's
but
it.
you did tell me you lived around them, so that helped or something
I grew up, but the thing was I stayed rooted to 17th Ave. And and you know, I never could forget the relationships I adored from 17th Ave, you know what I'm saying? And then you know, as I became a teenager and things like that, you know, the life of Patterson started to consume me. You know, I started using drugs at a really young age. A lot of people don't know, like, I sniffed my first bag of heroin, or as my sister says, heroin. she kills me with that. Like, it's not heroin, it's heroin.
sound like three words.
Yeah, I'm like, come on, we say heroin. No, it's heroin, Malai. I'm like, oh, gosh, you know, technically right. But I sniffed my first bag of Doogie, man, when I was like 8 years old. And I was 8 years old. I was 8 years old when I sniffed my first bag of Doogie.
You got me because I started sniffing coke at 14. So you got me with that one. But go ahead.
Yeah, and you know, Market Street used to be real frequent then with the, you know, floor of heroin and Doogie and cocaine, you know, and I used to go down to the store and play the video game Galaxy or something, and the elder out there who used to hustle used to let me watch his package behind the video game. And then, you know, it's just by chance one day, we was out there and one of the packages fell out and one of my friends found it and we went back to my house. Now check this out. This was what we got high on, man. This is how crazy. The influence, and I'm telling you this because I'm trying to lead you to something. The influence was, you know, very impactful back then because we wanted to be like the people that was being projected to us. You understand what I'm saying? Like, you know, in the football, where I was a good football player. So everybody in the area would always talk about me, about playing ball for this high school, that high school. And, of course, I wanted to knock the walls down at Eastside. And a dude named Terry Brown was a quarterback. And you had another Terry who was, forget his name, he was a running back. You know, and I wanted to be like these dudes. But these dudes was all older than me. So the influence was something that took me to where we went. So when we found this bag of heroin, we went back to my home. We got some little bit of liquor. We got some incense, and we had some cigarettes. We sat down in the hallway. We lit the incense and sniffed the incense as if it was getting us high. We would burn the incense and sniff and inhale the incense because we thought that's why the adults would burn incense, right?
Oh, wow.
And
that's crazy. That's
deep.
Yeah,
man. I'm telling you, we thought this is what the adults were doing when they was burning incense, okay, because everybody would be stimulated. And we didn't understand. We thinking the incense is what's getting them stimulated. You understand what I'm saying? And we would drink. You know, we sat there. We tried some of the alcohol. We smoked some of the cigarettes. And we sniffed. We all four of us sat there and sniffed a little bit of the doogie. Now, that was my first experience with drugs in any form, intoxications at any time, you know, as far as, you know, getting high. But that would become the actual, you know, vice that will, at that time, distract me from many, many, many positive opportunities in my life.
Right.
And, you know what I'm saying? It became something that, you know, for many years, man, I was an addict. You know, for many years, man. And then it was times I was an addict in the streets where, you know, I didn't have to be in the streets. You know what I'm saying? I would literally be in the streets, you know, looking, you know, like I'm a mess. But the whole time I'm a dude. I got my act together.
Right.
I got things going on for me. I got a home I can go lay my head on. You know, lay my head down. I got people who love me. I got money. You know what I'm saying? I'm not busted, but I'm out in the streets like this. You know what I'm saying? Getting high, and then it was so accessible. It was so available. You understand? Being up there on East 18th Street, you know, associated, affiliated with a lot of people, the San Diego Brothers. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you remember them.
I remember.
Yeah. It was, you know, I loved them dudes, and them dudes, they used to, you know, treat me good back in them days. You know, I had a lot of respect with the Hispanics up there with the cocaine, you know what I'm saying? And
I bought my first bag of coke from them.
Right, and I had a good reputation, a good rapport with, you know, Hispanics in the area from Market Street, Park Avenue, Beach Street area. Roberto Clemente Park, you know, so I was the plug for a lot of brothers that didn't want to come up there or felt like they didn't feel comfortable or they felt a little intimidated, you know, dealing with some of the Hispanics, you know, some of the power rules, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, but me, a few other brothers, Kevin Henderson, El Amin, Albert Kelly, you know, Tony, what's his name? Tony Thomas. His brother played NBA basketball. You know what I'm saying? Like, all these dudes, like, we lived up there. So as African Americans in that area, we was really well known with the Hispanics. We held our own with them. And that gave us a lot of access to, you know, certain, perspectives that a lot of times, a lot of the, you know, brothers who didn't live in that area, you know, they ain't frequent. So it was easy for me to meet, you know, Hispanic girls. And I can remember when I was young and I was dating this, you know, the Pariquas, man, the sisters would be mad at me, bro. Like, they didn't want nothing to do with me. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, you tripping. Like, you selling out. You know, it was like, and I'm not a racial person, but it was like, for them, it was like, well, you messing with a white girl. You know what I'm saying? You tripping, you know?
They wasn't going for that, right? The black people wasn't going for that.
Yeah, they didn't like that. Like, why you got to go mess with the Puerto Rican girls? Like, what, we ain't good enough for you? You know, what are you tripping, but like, you know, Derek D. Hands, you tripping, you know what I mean? But, yo, man, you know, one of the things I really wanted to express, though, like, when I was on 17th Ave and when I was hanging out in Patterson on Market Street, Park Avenue, 12th Avenue, Graham Avenue, and we was running through, you know, up the hill, like we like to call it, you know, because we used to run there. We used to run through there, you know, Park Avenue. You know, everybody was doing their thing. But the one thing that I lived a life that was good in a way, you know, like I had sincere friendship. And I had sincere people who loved me. And those people who loved me from Market Street, Park Avenue, 17th Ave, you know, like 17th Ave, the brotherhood I had there, it's like, and it brings me.
Like the what?
17th Ave, man. 17th Ave was the brotherhood was something that I didn't have as a kid.
Right.
So, you know, when I used to go on 17th Ave, you know, and I knew the people there, the brothers there, man, they loved me. You know what I'm saying? I remember, like, a lot of people don't know. A lot of times, you know, we had life and death situations out there. You know what I'm saying? And as a young man, you know, knowing that I could depend on somebody who's not my family, but who is my family, like, you know what I'm saying? We ain't from the same mother. We ain't from the same, but we family because we grew up together. You know, we played.
Yeah.
We played. You know what I'm saying? As kids, we played football together. But now here we are, young adults, and I knew that if things, you know, got hectic, like I could call on you. And people don't understand, like having that in that environment was good. It was real for you. It's like you needed that. You needed to be able to have that backup, that support. You know what I'm saying? It didn't matter if you could hold your own. You know what I'm saying? It didn't matter. Because you're gonna have to show and prove you can hold your own. But at the same time, you're gonna need that support out there, man. You know, in them streets, man. You know,
I don't mean to cut you off, but like that's what I tell people like about 17th Ave, like, and
yes, man.
One of my kids' mother, she always tell me like that like I wish I had friends like you, like the friends you got, because you know, like the brotherhood that, and I mean I don't know about other blocks, you know what I mean, because you know, like I didn't, like you moved around, like I never moved around, like a lot of people moved around, like I always was just, you know, I was born on 17th Ave and 31st. I hung on 17th Ave from like 15 years old till I was 30, so my brotherhood was always there, like, and I feel what you're saying, because I know time, like I always tell people, like the hood, it's a little echo, but like the 17th Ave is like this. It's like, it was like a strong bond we had.
Right.
And we could, if you needed somebody, they was going to be there for you. You know what I mean?
They was going to be there for you.
They was going to be there for you. I knew times when I needed people, you know, and I could just, when I needed somebody, and then you could just ride on 17th Ave. Whoever was out there at that time, whoever was out there,
if you was in a jam, they riding, bro. It wasn't no hesitation. It wasn't like, yo, hold up, I'll be right back. Nah, let's go handle that. You know what I'm saying?
I know when I was doing my thing, you know, when I was pimping and everything, I know when I was doing my thing and I ran into a situation one time and I just happened to ride through there and it was a couple of people out. I don't know how many people, it was a couple of people out there and I always remember and I think Nayshawn, I think he on the line, but I always remember I rode out there and Nayshawn was out there and I was like, Nayshawn, yo, is somebody down at the club messing with one of my girls, you know what I mean? It was like no hesitation, you know, he just jumped in the car, let's go, Jay. And that's what I tell people, we had a certain kind of bond that it was unbelievable.
Cutting your wisdom because people don't understand.
No, go ahead.
It's negative situations that we're talking about, but these negative situations created positive circumstances for us as men. You understand
right.
what I'm saying? Look, let me explain something to you, man. Like I'm in VA, bro. I'm in Virginia. I'm in Norfolk, Virginia. Okay? I've been out here now since 1991. And I'm going to tell you something, man. The brotherhood I grew up out there with, I've not seen existing here yet since I've been out here. And I understand why. Because the people, the location here is not like the location and demographics of Paterson, New Jersey. You understand what I'm saying? Like people living on top of each other. People living, you know, in a confined space. You understand? When you walk from one block to the next block, you got to know that you know these people or these people know you or you got to have some kind of respect. Or so. See, it ain't like that out here. You understand what I'm saying? Down here, down in the South, it's not that kind of vibe. You know, people have, man, you got people down here, they got homes, they got, you know, it's like they say, they'll tell you in the projects. I mean, when I first came out here and the brother told me I was in the project, I said, what, these townhouses? You know what I'm saying? When he took me to Roberts Park in Norfolk, Virginia, he said, yeah, we down in the project. I was like, what, these townhouses, ain't it? He's like, no, this is the projects, bro.
That's what I wanted to get into. Well, look, this, we got, it's a lot of people on the line, right? And, I want to let everybody know. I see everybody that's pressing one. I guess people that want to speak to you. We're gonna get to you. You know what I'm saying? But we got time. As long as the brother don't got anywhere to go, we got time.
Nah, I'm good.
It's a little echo. I'm trying to find out what this echo is in this phone. You got your phone on speaker?
I don't.
How you got your phone?
I got mine on. I got mine on a Bluetooth.
Okay, wait.
You want me to put it on speaker?
No. I don't hear it now. I'm gonna I'm gonna take a break. I'm gonna go to a song, and we're gonna come back and we're gonna move into your Virginia years. And we got a couple of callers out here that want to speak to you. You know, but we're gonna everybody. If you're on the line, we appreciate you on the line. Please hold. We're gonna get to you. We got time. We're gonna go to a song. And then we'll be right back with Derek Hansler, aka D Hands Malau. We'll be right back after the song.
Got some gas, nigga, roll up,
Fly nigga, I be floating, I Rolls Royce. If she want me, then she got me, you got no choice. We getting money and we popping, you make no noise. Yeah, party bad bitches, we want no boys. Big mansion in the hills, I'm Uncle Elroy. Throw my money, do my dance while they stare on. She gon' bust me down cause my bank long. I just made a 50, ain't no bank loan. I be jiggin' with a beeper, hit the payphone. Get it in with my meager, split the pesos. Might need you for the neck, but I don't chase hoes. I can get you for the checks, I want the bankrolls. Your bitch gon' eat the D, I call it Mickey D's. All this water on my neck, I'm drippin' VVs. Put the ice up on my wrist and we're in a D-freeze. Had to pull up in that Benz, I'm going D-sweeze. Like my nigga can't five, I tell him B's. My cousin bangin' for the five, he bangin' big B's. But my homies from the other side, I don't bang cause they bang for me otherwise. Fly nigga, I be floating out Rolls Royce. If she want me, then she got me, you got no choice. We getting money and we popping, you make no noise. Yeah, party bad bitches, we want no boys. Big mansion in the hills, I'm Uncle Elroy. Throw my money, do my dance while they stare on. She gon' bust me down cause my bank long. I just made a 50, ain't no bank long.
She think I love her, I'm just guessing like Valero. Hop in the coupe with a bird, she's a sparrow. Niggas mad cause I keep shooters like LaMelo. Don't be mad, your niggas softer than some pillows. See what some pointers in your ear, bitch, these igloos. And what I spent on the chain cause a ice age. She just tryna kick it, I ain't Luke Kane. Big Bentley whippin', talking Moose Sane. Big nigga drip, make a sucker than the colonist. Door close itself, all I do is press a button it. Bought a B&B, cause that's what I feel like fucking it. Louis V, duffel, yeah, them racks, we be stuffing.
Nigga clap, do the soldier, yeah. She throw it back, I'm like, hold up, yeah. Ayy, in the cream soda, eh. Got some gas, nigga, roll up, eh.
Fly nigga, I be floating out Rolls Royce. If she want me, then she got me, you got no choice. We getting money and we popping, you make no noise. Yeah, party bad bitches, we want no boys. Big mansion in the hills, I'm Uncle Elroy. Throw my money, do my dance while they stare on. She gon' bust me down cause my bank long. I just made a 50, ain't no bank long.
Yeah, welcome back. Welcome back to the Keeping It Real with Jay Sean Online Radio Podcast. If you're on the line and you press 1, we're going to get to you shortly. If you click down the link, if you want to speak to me, the host, or the guest, you have to call in. Sorry for the delay. Welcome back to the show. D-Hand, you still here with me?
Oh, absolutely, beloved. I'm here with you all day, brother. All right. I'm always here with you, brother.
All right. We're gonna move on to the Virginia air, you know, and I don't really like talking about it, but we wanna move on to the, you know, to the situation with the, you know, what led up to you being incarcerated and stuff like that, and the way the system the injustice that you occurred, if you don't mind.
Right. No, that's listen, you know, I'm here to speak the truth, because see, a lot of people don't understand, man, like, we can, you know, we can perpetrate, but really we know who we were and who we are and what we were and what we were doing in the streets. I never was a poo-putt, as we say, you know what I'm saying? I was an official cat in the streets. I was official. You couldn't just roll down on me and do what you wanted. That wasn't, you know, I wasn't that kind of dude. I did my thing, you know, I was an addict, but I was also a hustler, and I was also a well-respected person in the streets. So when I came out to Virginia, you know what I'm saying, that nature of me, you know, was still, you know, relevant. And, you know, I was still using drugs, and, you know, I was out here doing my thing. You know, I was tied in with my brother who's out here with me, Emmanuel. And at the time, he was, you know, they called him Shampoo. Me and him got tied in together. And I started doing my thing on the radio station out here, 103 Jams. And I was working with 103 Jams, doing some shows with them, promoting shows, doing security work. Because, you know, I'm not the best with my hands, but I know how to handle myself. So it was easy for me to, you know, get in that mainstream of security and things like that, which gave me access because I started to become known and recognized and respected. But my addiction of, you know, heroin and crack was really hitting me hard here because it was, like I said, the access was always there for me. You know, I didn't have a problem. You know, I can run through packages and still go get another pack, and you know, because people respected me. And then, you know, it was one of those things that I got into the game and left out of the game. I dropped out of the game, but I had gave some bundles to a dude who's a doctor out here. He was a physician. And I hadn't seen him in a while. Like, I gave him, like, 3 bundles or something. And I hadn't seen him in a while. And, I gave him, like, 5 bundles. He disappeared on me for, like, 2 or 3 months. So one day I'm just at the gas station, and I'm pumping up some gas. This is back in 1995. Okay. And I'm pumping up some gas, and as I'm pumping up the gas, I see his vehicle across the street. When I see the vehicle, of course, in my mind, I'm like, oh, my, I know this ain't who I think it is. And when I look, I recognize the individual, so I proceed over to him, not realizing, first of all, that he was with another individual who was his wife, I guess, at the time. I didn't know at the time. And as I approached, you know, the woman, she became a little startled, and I was like, oh, whoa, ma'am, you know, I'm not, this is Jack. I said, ma'am, oh, I'm not here to hurt you. You know, I'm just here to, you know, what's good with my money, man, you know? And so he was like, oh, you know, and I apologize, you know, had to take off and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, cool, cool, you know, I said, you know, and his wife was like, oh, I'm so tired of this nonsense, this, you know, this BS. And so, you know, I was just like, look, man, I'm not here to hurt you. I just, you know, I just want my money. I said, as a matter of fact, you can give me $200, we good. You know, and she went ahead and gave me the $200. I took the $200, I left. About 3 weeks later, my mother calls me, and she's like, yo, she's blowing my page up. And she's like, yo, you need to get home and find out what's going on. I said, what are you talking about? She said, you're on Norfolk's Most Wanted. So I'm on Norfolk's Most Wanted. She said, yeah, you are Norfolk's Most Wanted for a number of charges. And I was like, huh? I said, you sure? She was like, yeah. So I go directly to the police station, bro. Go to the police station. They tell me a number of charges that they're trying to run me up on. Then they tell me, okay, well, we're not going to charge you with these charges, but we're going to charge you with abduction and robbery. And then they say, well, we're going to remove the abduction, but we're going to give you a robbery charge. So I was like, I didn't rob anybody. And so they come and they show me a picture of me standing there with a cigarette in my mouth and my arms crossed at the ATM, in front of the ATM machine with the young lady, I guess, doing what she's doing at the ATM machine. So I was like, wow. You know, I denied that it was me, of course, but, you know, it was me. So, they gave me a $150 bill. I got out of the bill. Long story short, I went and sought me an attorney because I didn't know what was, you know, I'm like, I don't know what the circumstances is, but, you know I got to go to court for a crime. So I'm like, you know, this ain't nothing serious. That should be pretty good. So I go ahead and I seek an attorney. And the attorney I sought, he's supposed to be from Jersey. He's supposed to be from Plainsville, New Jersey. This is one of the reasons why I sought, because his name was Broccoletti. He's supposed to be one of the top paid attorneys in the state of Virginia and all of this stuff. And he's supposed to be one of the top attorneys. So I was like, you know, this is my circumstance. So we go ahead in and things begin, you know, to get right. And he's telling me, oh, don't worry about it. You're gonna probably get probation out of this. Just don't worry about it. We're good. We're going to take care of this. I go to court May the 21st. When I go to court for sentencing May the 21st, they cannot determine whether I got 1 felony or 3 felonies. So I'm like, what are you talking about, 3 felonies? I don't have 3 felonies. This is my second felony charge. So they're like, no, we got you down for having 3 felonies, and if that's the case, you're committed, you know, you're a career criminal. And I'm like, career criminal? What? You know, and so I'm baffled. So they postpone it to the 24th. When we go back to court on the 24th, lo and behold, we go in. I'm told again, you're only going to get probation. Don't worry about it. you know, I took a guilty plea to cop out to probation. I go into the court before a judge named Rutherford. He gives me 50 years with 30 years to do for unarmed robbery, no weapon, no assault, no trauma to the victim. And my mother screamed in the background as if she was at my funeral. And I'll never forget that scream. I'll never forget that sound, because it is actually the point where I realize that, you know, I'm in a fight for my life right now. So when he gave me the sentence, I had to keep my composure. My mother was, you know, frantic and very upset and emotional. So I kept my composure, and he asked me, did I have any final words? And I said, all I said was, alhamdulillah, all praise and thanks to Allah. He said, excuse me, what did you say? You said something smart to me? And I said, no, sir. I just spoke in Arabic, and what I said in translation was all praise and thanks to Allah. And he says, okay, get him out of here. And he took me in the back, and when he took me in the back, I broke down. I broke down because here I was. I was 4 days from my 30th birthday, and now I was about to spend 30 years of my life in prison. I would have been I'm coming home at 60 years of age. You know, my whole life is gone. And for, you know, anybody who know about doing time, like 25 years is a life sentence, actually. So, you know what I'm saying? I was like, yo, I'm getting ready to go into prison. And my concept of prison is like up north. So in my mind, you know, I'm not coming home. You know what I'm saying? There's no way I'm going to come home.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's, right.
You know, 25 years of dealing with idiots and people who are going to, you know, and I'm the no-nonsense dude. It's just not going to happen. Either I'm going to kill somebody or somebody going to kill me, and I just knew I wasn't going to make it. But,
That's, hold on one second. So the thing is, so look, this is what baffles me out of everything. Because you told me earlier, your bail was $100. You paid $150 bail.
Yeah, my bail was $150. My bail was $1,500. I paid $150 to the bail bondsman. That was my bail. My bail was $150. Uh-huh. My sentence, my actual original sentence, just so you know, I was sentenced illegally. Let me bring to mind what happened. What happened was, they compounded my history. They went into my files, they fraudulated my criminal history, they took a juvenile charge that I had, and they placed it on my adult jacket as an adult charge. You know, in New Jersey, when you turn 18, your records are expunged. They
right.
went into my files somehow they violated my rights. They went into my files, and they took what the domestic courts of New Jersey sent a letter screaming on them, like, how the hell did they get this information? It is, you know, it's you know, expunged. It's not supposed to be released or, you know, in any type of form or fashion, but somehow they got the information. They utilized it. They compounded my history and said that I had two other felonies, and that this was my third felony. So, therefore, the judge, he sought a harsh sentence, and he disclaimed my guilty plea for probation. He just totally threw it out. And so that's what I was dealing with. And it wasn't until 2002 that my counselor, they do what is called your annual review. And the annual
right.
review brings you up to circumvent your time, how much, you know, your credits and, you know, your pre-sentencing report. So come to find out, they didn't have my correct pre-sentencing report. Now, I had no knowledge of all of this, but my attorney did. But I did.
Right.
And this is where I found out my attorney, he pretty much sold me out. And Yeah, so you know what I'm saying? He sold me out for another young man that was like 19 years old who had 49 positively identified armed robberies, and they had him positively identified for 16 of them. So it was like either him or me. You know, if they was going to give him a break, where I got 30 years, I got 50 years, 30 years to do, he had got 40 years with some something of that nature. But we followed each other in the courtroom, and that's where I ended up through, you know, history. I ended up reviewing things and found out this, you know, this was how it really went down. We also later on found out I never had a transcript. My transcript was lost and confounded. My original pre-sentencing report, they withheld from me. I could never file a direct appeal because I had no paperwork to file a direct appeal. They just bamboozled me all around the board.
That's crazy. So look, yeah. What kind of advice would you give somebody to make sure that they didn't get caught up in a situation like that? Or is it inevitable? Like it's nothing you could do?
Yeah, that's nothing. Like there's no way to, you can't really defend yourself from anything like that in the courts. That's something, the only way that we can fight things like that or any, we have to start in the society, calling for renewals of judicial systems throughout the United States. You see what I'm saying?
Wow.
Because you got a state like Virginia. Virginia is the first and last state of slavery. Now, I want to ask you something. You ever heard of debt peonage?
What's the word? What is it?
Debt peonage. Like D-E-P-T peonage.
No, I haven't.
All right. After slavery, right? Slavery was emancipated in 1863, right?
Yeah.
Okay. After slavery, okay, they had what is called the neo-slavery. That was where, you know what I'm saying, you still had the people suffering, like what we call Juneteenth, right? Where some in 1863, knew about the emancipation, but then you still had the neo-slavery where you still had slaves who, even though they were free or they didn't know they were free, they were being held as slaves, and then even some who were free, because they had nothing or they had nowhere to go, they remained, you know, on the plantations, right? Well, after they vanquished that, the neo-slavery, okay, they brought in what is called debt peonage. Debt peonage is a form of enslavement where, let's say you get caught for a crime on my plantation. So when you get caught for stealing some corn on my plantation, now you work for me. You're now a slave under my, ruling or whatever, under my custody until I see fit that you paid your debt. So what they would do is continuously keep you paying your debt. So now every time that you would fall short in your paying your debt, they would increase it. You see what I'm saying? Debt peonage was supposedly to be expunged by President Roosevelt in 1943, but then they just rearranged the names and titles, and it's what you actually see today where we see 89% of African Americans who are presently under some type of form of judicial, supervision, whether it's probation, parole, or something of this nature. Well, that's debt peonage. Your debt is never paid. Your debt is never paid. You see what I'm saying?
Sadly, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off, but somebody text me and asked me to ask you, when you came home, how did it feel when you come home? Did people look at you like you was like a criminal, or how did people accept you when you came home?
Well, coming home, you know what I'm saying, was I'm a very transparent person. So I'm Muslim first and foremost. So when you see me, you know I'm Muslim. Because I wear my izars, I wear my thobes, and when I came home, I was prepared. You know, I was prepared, man.
Right.
Like, I didn't. You got to understand, son. I never. I never thought I would come home. But when I when the pivotal parts of my incarceration called me to realize that, you know, I need to live. You understand what I'm saying? So what I constantly did my bid as if I was going home. And I can remember in my 30 years, like, I had more time than some dudes who had double homicide, bro. But I want you to understand
that's crazy.
I want you to, this is actual fact. I got summaries and everything. Not only that, but there were times that in my incarceration where, you know, people, like, would come up to me and be like, you know, ain't you getting ready to go home? Like, nah, you know, I got 30 years. You know, my charge is robbery, but they had me classified as nonviolent. So here I was, a nonviolent offender, serving a 30-year sentence when you had violent offenders who were only serving 8 years, 10 years. You understand what I'm saying? For similar
offenses. That's what
offense.
I meant to ask you. That's what I meant to ask you, too. I meant to ask you, like, how, for people who don't know, who never been incarcerated or whatever, how do you fix your brain around doing 25 years in prison?
It's not, you don't fix your brain. You fix your heart. Because, see, your brain will fail you, man. But your heart, you got to fix your heart, huh? Your heart, you got to cleanse your heart. And you have to desire to live, because if you don't desire to live, it's either you're going to be stagnated and remain the same, or you're going to lose your life in there, or you're just going to be, you know, a poo-putt. You know what I'm saying? It's either one. Or you're going to make the changes in your life in order for you to survive and be a person who can go out in society and continue to live your life. When I came home, man, you know what I'm saying? I didn't care about whether people accepted me. When I came home, what I cared about was my family accepting me. You see, because I had a great deal. You know, you got to understand something. My mother, I'm going to tell you a little story. My mother lived in East Orange at one time. Nayshawn called me from, you know, we had the phone booth right there at the laundromat, right? Nayshawn called me at that phone booth, and he said, Malai, he said, yo, we out here rumbling with these niggas. And I was like, what? He was like, yeah, we out here rumbling with these cats. Boom. So my mother, I said, yeah, I needed a ride. So I tell my mother, I said, Ma, I need you to drop me off on 17th Ave. Now, I'm telling you this for a reason, right? She drives, she gets in her car, takes me from East Orange to 17th Ave. I jump up out the car, and I immediately go and punch somebody in the face. Okay? My mother's like, what the hell are you, you know what I'm saying? She's like, what are you doing, boy? I'm like, this is my family, Ma. They called me, I had to come. She's like, you're crazy. Boy, I drove all the way over here for you to come and punch somebody. You done gone crazy, boy. You understand? Now, I'm saying that to say this. That's the affection I have for everybody that's my family. I've always been a protector for my family. I've always been, you know, whether it's my blood-related family, whether my 17th Ave family, whether it's my Market Street family, you know what I'm saying? And the people, you know, that I grew up with, you know, that love me, you know, I had to make mention of this because she just told me she's going to get on me, but... one of my girlfriends at that time, who was really the love of my life at that time, her name was Kathy McCardle. She was a very beautiful person in my life, and she and I used to be very. I know Shireem and all the, you know, everybody knew her from 75. But you know, these people were people I was used to protecting. So when I went to prison. Like my brother here, Emmanuel Shampoo, my brother Michael, my mother, all my family in Patterson. When I would call home and I would hear of the struggles that people were going, my sister Nikki, my sister Janelle, you know, my father. When I would hear things going on, you know how helpless I would feel, man? Like, I felt so useless, you know, because I'm used to being a protector to the people I love.
Right.
So when I would call, you know, when I'm calling home and I'm hearing, you know, this going on, and I can't do anything but pray. I can't do anything. I can maybe make a phone call and have somebody go check on them or hand, but that's not the same as me, because I'm not there to oversee that things is all right. You understand what I'm saying? So
Yeah, I feel you.
You know, so for me, it was a lot of helpless days in there, you know. And I can remember when they had the New Orleans flood. What is that? The Katrina joint.
Katrina.
And I remember, right, when they had the Katrina flood, I can remember literally falling on my knees, crying and asking the Lord to forgive me, because I was in prison. And I would pray. I pray that nothing like that would happen here in Virginia, because my mother lived down by the beach. So I was like, and then a lot of times they had a lot of flooding. So I would,
yeah.
I prayed and cried, man, because I'm like, God forbid my mother is in that situation by herself, and I'm in here. I can't do anything for her. So this kind of was one of the things that I had to heal from in prison. You know, I had to learn that. You know what I'm saying? I can't beat myself up for things that, you know, I can't control. You know what I'm saying? And I had to let some things go and let Allah handle it, and, you know, just have some patience. And I had to work on my heart, bro. I had to get my heart right, because if I didn't, I wouldn't survive. I wouldn't survive. And I have to be honest with you. I did consider suicide. My first year, when I went to the jail, if I could tell you this in a moment, I went to the jail. When I got to the jail, I was good. I get my time. I ended up going to a place called the reception there, Deep Meadows. When I got to Deep Meadows, I never heard of this. I got a conspiracy to attempt assault. I was like, these people are crazy. So they locked me up. They sent me to what they saying now. They sent me to Greensville. Greensville is the largest prison, state prison on the East Coast. Greensville houses up to 4,000 or more inmates. It actually holds. It has four compounds. It's four compounds on one compound. It's the largest prison institution on the East Coast. So I'm told I'm going to Greensville. My mind. It's time for me to handle my business. I get to Greensville. When I get to Greensville, I finally meet somebody from Patterson. I don't know if you're familiar. You remember Curtis White, Kershie?
Yeah, from 12th Ave.
From 12th Ave. Right. I get in there. I'm waiting to get to the phone. I hear his voice. I hear him in the pod. And then they're telling him that it's a Muslim brother up there. And they're telling him he's from New Jersey. And I can hear him saying, well, from Jersey? What part of Jersey? And he's like, they don't know. And so he's like, pop the door. Get him out of there, because he was the barber. And I was Muslim, and we was both, and he was Muslim. And we were going to eat for Ramadan. It was my first night there. And when they popped the door, and we both see each other, we just fell out like, what, you know, what's going to be? You know what I'm saying? And, you know, that was the first person that I even knew or was familiar with, aside from my Muslim brothers there, because I was, you know, at Deep Meadows, I had became the imam, but the religious leader. So when I get there, finally, me and him go, and he gets me down there, showing me the way. I mess around like a month in, I get an assault charge. I punish a dude pretty bad. They put me in the hole, bro, for 28 months. When I go in the hole for 28 months for the assault charge, in my cell area, I had an older man, a Caucasian man who was Irish. He was in his 70s. He had a life sentence. He had a fresh new life sentence. I was in the middle of him on one side, and I had a fresh 30. On the other side, on my left-hand side, was a young man who was 18 years old. Another Caucasian kid. He had a double life sentence, okay?
Wow.
So every day, these two dudes, I'm trying to keep them from committing suicide. Every single day, they're talking about suicide. So every day I'm telling them, like, your life, every single day, bro, I'm telling them, like, your life is important. You know, you can't, you know, fold to this. You can make it. We just got to stand strong. At the same time I'm telling them this, my subconscious is beating me down. Like, you telling them that you gotta make it. You understand? So,
wow.
Suddenly, the old man commits suicide. He dies.
He committed suicide?
Yeah, he committed suicide. He cut his wrists, and he died. Cut both his wrists with his razor, and he died. So the young kid, he's on the other side of me, and he's frantic. And he's talking, you know, he's saying, man, I can't do two life sentences. I'm like, yes, you can. So I had him listening to my Walkman at the time, and we would share it. So this night, I could feel the tension because he's really, you know, he's really going in about older guy. So I finally, I get him to listen to the Walkman and calm him down a little bit. The next morning, all of a sudden, I woke up. They're trying to get him out of the cell because he done attempted suicide. He took a toothpaste container, cut both ends, stuck a bunch of razors down into the toothpaste container so that he can swallow the razors, okay? Mm. But from my knowledge at that time, he did not die, okay? At that time, he did not die. So now these two are gone. So now the only person left is me. So,
wow.
And so I'm now I got to counsel myself. And I'm
right.
Sitting there, you know, telling myself, like, yo, you know, let's get up. Let's do these push-ups. Let's get up and pray. Stop. We can't sit here in depression, brother. Let's go. But at the same time, I was telling myself, man, you got 30 years, man. You're going to be an old man. Ain't nothing going to be out there for you. Your family going to be dead. Might as well go ahead and just end it. And I actually contemplated it. But, you know, God had a better plan for me, and I'm grateful for that. You know what I'm saying? And
did.
I held on
yes,
to the rope.
Did.
I held on to the rope of Allah, and I got through the 28 months of being in the hole. But I spent my first 8 years in the hole. My mother would drive for 5 to 6 hours to see me at Augusta Prison, which is all the way up in, it's like on the borderline between Tennessee and Virginia and West Virginia. And, like I said, I remained in the hole for quite some time. For 8 years, I kept going back and forth. You know, I was very angry about my situation, but I had to change my heart. And just so I had to really, you know, work on getting my heart renewed because that was the only way I could make it. You know what I'm saying? I had a few incidents. I had a few incidents where, you know, I could have lost my life. I did also enhance my sentence because I assaulted a police officer. I ended up, you know, losing my temper, and I put my hands on an officer, you know what I'm saying? And that didn't cost me another 18 months in the hole, you know what I'm saying? But it was those situations that just made me a better person, and it made me realize, like, you know, I wanted to change. I wanted to live right. You know, I wanted to stop being an angry, aggressive dude, you know, and, you know, feeling like I can, you know, knock walls down anytime I felt like it, you know, and it just changed me to where I just wanted to embrace my faith and learn how I can better, you know, help myself, that I can help others. And that's what I started, you know, working on my sister. She encouraged my sister, Nikki. She had been going to school, and she encouraged me to, get into counseling. You know,
You're a strong brother, man. I respect you, man. You, anybody who's been through what you've been through, you know what I mean? Like, and you still here to talk about it. You know what I mean? But look, let's see who on the line. Let's see who on the line real
quick.
Yeah,
let's check it out.
All right. Let's Let's see, 6052, you on the line?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. How you doing, Jay Sean?
What's up, bro?
Okay. I love the way you were speaking and everything. It really uplifted me. I ain't gonna say no name, but me and you grew up also on 17th Ave.
Okay.
I remember when I was in 11th grade, and you know we had a conflict with some people from the projects and somewhere. So you pointed me out to fight somebody on Market Street and Pillman Street. But all in all, you just wanted to see where my heart was at. So you let me throw four punches and push me out the way, and you said, it's my turn, and you had people do it up. So you know who this is. When you first came home, you talked about it.
Yeah, this is
about
yourself.
I just want to say thank you for your inspiration. It was really deep. And, you know, you got to come back on. Brother Jay Sean, I got to have you back on, my brother.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
A lot of more people.
Love you, fam.
So.
I love you, fam. I love you, bro.
All right, peace.
God from Brooklyn, peace.
All right. We'll see who else out here. 6-8-6-2-4.
Yes, I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm all right. You live on the air if you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I just was basically, I had two questions, like, as far as, like, heroin and how were you able to actually get off of it and stay off of it and not get affected to a point where you have to come back to it? That was the first question. And then the second question is, how do you help someone who is in the system who didn't do a crime and you really want to be on their side and try to figure out how to get them out of that, out of the system?
Okay.
Before anything goes to a point where you're locked up too long.
Let me just answer the first question. I'm a certified drug and alcohol counselor. I have a program called What About Drugs? It's also being sponsored by Tomorrow's Change. We come on live every weekday on Wednesdays. We're getting ready to change the date probably in another 2 days, but it's every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And what I had to do in my knowledge, and I don't knock NA and AA. They do what they do, but for me, NA and AA triggered a lot of things in me. It triggered me, you know what I'm saying? So I didn't really get a lot of benefit, and so I developed my own program, a 6-step program, 6 steps towards success. Okay, and I entitled my drug program is called What About Drugs, because what I come to find out, my issue wasn't heroin. My issue was the primary issues, the things that were taking place before I decided to use drugs that I was seeking relief from. And see, when I realized that this was the key to me removing myself from, you know, vices of addiction, because I had to deal with problems that I wasn't trying to deal with. So what I recommend for a lot of people is to, you know, stop, you know, sitting here saying that drugs is your problem. Drugs only compound my problems, and it compounds many of our other problems. Everybody, I don't care who you are. When you get high, you're getting high. Why? Because you want relief. So that relief you're seeking, it can be for many reasons. It's not always negative. It could be from the influences. Like, you know, a lot of dudes I know got strung out on the doogie because they wanted to keep an erection. Because they found out that doogies it allows you to go and go harder in the bed. You know what I'm saying? So they started sniffing dope. Next thing you know, they strung out on it. So, but these are the things you got to investigate. You got to assess yourself seriously and figure out what it is. Why did I start looking for relief? What was I seeking relief from? And when you start to attack those issues, then you can remove yourself from the addictive behavior. because you're changing the primary issues. You're changing the primary behavior that you've been trying to run from. So it begins there. And that's how I was able to remove my – I dealt with my issues. I didn't run from them, and I didn't seek relief from them. I sought to resolve them, meaning I sought to deal with them and relinquish them. I didn't want to hold on to them. I didn't want to keep beating myself up or beating anybody else up. I just wanted, okay, I went through that. Okay, that's what it is. It's time for me to grow up and move on. And that's what I did. And it starts with, like I said, acknowledging the primary issues of your life. If you were molested, acknowledge it. Forgive yourself because you didn't do it. Forgive the person who molested you. You got to move on with your life. You got to. If you were beat by your husband, if you were your brother influenced you, you know, your peer pressure. You got to acknowledge what the primary issues were. What was the reason that you started looking for relief? And once you acknowledge that, then you can move forward. As far as being someone in prison to change their life before they fall in, that's something you can try to help people. Sometimes you got to let people be where they are, man. Sometimes you got to let them be where they are because the experience may be necessary in order to help them. You see what I'm saying?
That your situation of being locked up for so long, you know, I don't think that a person should be locked up for that long just to grow up.
Well, let me just say this to you. I disagree with you on that. It was necessary for me. You know, in my inscription, I'm grateful for my incarceration because from that, they created another monster. You see, and I'm out here now showing improvement. While I was incarcerated, man, I was able to get an education. Okay, I'm a certified drug and alcohol counselor. I founded and developed my own nonprofit organization, rehabilitation program. I mentored and aided many young men. I developed a gang initiative program. I helped men get out of the Bloods and the Crips. You understand? I was able to establish myself in my faith and become, you know what I'm saying, more sincere and knowledgeable of my faith. So from my incarceration came a lot of positive things because I asserted myself. You see, I didn't allow the incarceration to do, like people say, you know, don't allow the time to do you, do the time. You see, well, I did the time, but I didn't just do the time sitting still or lingering around. I did work. I worked on my heart. I cleansed myself. I worked on my body. I worked on, you know, my relationships with my family. I accepted and acknowledged the fact that I was at fault, you know, irregardless of the fact that I was bamboozled. It was me, the lifestyle I was living, put me in that position first and foremost. So I had to have some accountability. You see what I'm saying? And that's what propelled me forward. See, I don't point the finger at nobody. I go ahead and handle my business. You see what I'm saying? Because my mother always tells me, she says, setback is just a setup for a great comeback. And that's all it is. You see? And one thing that I learned from this, what I was explaining earlier, like being where I grew up at, 17th Ave, Marcus Street, the love and the brotherhood that I had, that's what helped me become the man I am today. You know, being amongst them brothers, man, and doing the things that we was doing, because it wasn't all negative. You know, from a lot of it came a lot of positivity. You know, we was there for each other. And that is something that I carry with my, you know, with myself all the time. One of the things that I accomplished while I was in prison was, I'm from New Jersey. I'm in Virginia, and I'm doing my thing, and people like, you know, who are you? I'm not walking with a pack of dudes because I learned how to, you know, how to move and how to frequently associate with people and not be intimidated, you know, not be withdrawn because I'm not fitting in. You know what I'm saying? I don't got to fit in all the time. It ain't meant for me to fit in all the time. I have my own identity. You see what I'm saying? And this is what growing up on 17th Ave and going through the experiences I went through, this is how it helped me to become the man I became. So when I went into prison, it was just another level for me. It was just another level for me to grow and recognize how I need to improve upon my life. And, I, you know, and at first I didn't understand that. I didn't understand that. You know, at first I was angry. I was upset. I felt like, yo, this is wicked. And it was. You know, injustice is injustice. But from that injustice came a greater and stronger man. Now I'm here on the streets of Norfolk. I just had last weekend we had a community unity rally. We fed people out here on the corners with, we had five boxes of hamburgers. We had hot dogs. We had a bounce house for the kids. You know, we had vendors out here selling and enjoying themselves. You know, we had people come, man, we had so many cars parked up in the lot that we ain't had no more room to place the cars. You see, so all they did was create another monster. You see what I'm saying? And that's what we got to start doing. We got to stop sitting back trying to fault circumstances of our life and use the circumstances to propel ourselves forward.
Right, Malau.
The condition. Yeah, I got you, bro. My fault.
I don't mean to cut you off. I see you on the road. We got some more callers coming on.
Okay, can I just say something to the young lady?
Go ahead. Tell the person whoever you're concerned about,
do not allow the condition that they're surrounding him to change the condition of their heart. Tell them to allow their heart to change the condition of their environment. Their heart, let their heart change, because in their heart is their state of being. The condition at the end does not define the condition of their heart. So you just remind that person of that. You just remind him that his condition does not change the condition of his heart. The condition that surrounds him does not change the condition of his heart. Okay?
Thank you for calling in. Thank you. I don't mean to rush you. We just got some other people on, but thank you for calling in. We got a couple more minutes to go. All right. Thank you very much.
It's nice speaking to you, sister.
Yeah. You too.
We got another caller. Hold on 1 second. Okay. Three two eight two.
Yeah, can you hear me? First of all, I'd like to address the brother by saying Salaam Alaikum, my brother. Is he there?
Hold on one second.
Okay. Can you hear me?
He here now.
Okay. Yeah, my brother, I was giving you the greeting, and I said I got to address my brother first and foremost by saying, Salaam alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum as-salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I got in here half an hour late because I was handling some family business, but Brother Jay is responsible for me having my own podcast, and I have a Muslim brother who comes on and ends my shows. Jay will verify this. The brother's name is Rashad El Amin. He's a naturopath, and he brings health and healing to our people through his nutritional expertise. So we come up here and talk about the lies about the COVID shot and things of that nature. But I just like to commend you, my brother. Okay, I got a brother that's about to get out. He's down in Bayside. He did 27 years, and he got educated.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's a shame with our people that we have to get confined and then get educated because we got nothing better to do. Like you said, we can take the low road or the high road. And most people who come out of incarceration, once they educate themselves, see the ills and the wrongs of their way, and they change their life around, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, one of our greatest leaders of all time, one of them was Malcolm. And, you know, he came out of jail, you know.
Yes,
and he transformed his life. And even Malcolm said it one time, because when I was small, my father had Malcolm's albums in the basement. I used to listen to him all the time. And he said, once a man changes his way of thinking, his behavior changes. And you are a good, and my brother, you are a good example of that. And like I said, I commend you. There's nothing much I can say. I'm from Newark, by the way, all right, because the same way y'all got 17th Avenue, we got Prince Street. And me and Jay talk about it all the time. You know,
love Prince Street, man. New brothers from Prince Street. Absolutely.
There you go. So we got our Prince
Street. And
you got 17th Avenue.
You had 17th Avenue projects, too. Don't forget that.
7th Avenue projects. Yeah. And here's the funny thing. When I told Jay, because I did promotions myself. You know, I was in the entertainment world for a minute. And I used to come as far as early as 1974, 75, when the Alabama Project was playing. I told Jay. I said, Jay, I met a girl at a party, and I came in. He said, I wasn't even going to Alabama Project. And I told him, brother, listen, I was from North. But if you're from North and you carry yourself a certain way, you get along with everybody. I don't care what community you're in.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And I listen, brother, I met sisters in the presidentials. I met them in
the
I spent nights over. I met sisters, man, the beautiful ladies. I just happened to meet them out. You know, we had a little thing going on. But the thing is, it was fun, and I never had a problem in Patterson, and I met quite a few brothers in Patterson. Unfortunately, when I was running through there at the time giving shows and stuff, I probably didn't have the pleasure of meeting you, my brother. But I ran into Jay. I got introduced to Jay through my man. You might know the brothers, went by the name of Supreme.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So other than that, brother, I just want to thank you for that, and I hope you, because, brother, listen, people ask me my religion. My brother is Muslim, and I have quite a few people in my family that are Muslim. I haven't, you know, submitted, but people ask me what's my religion. I tell them respect for life. You respect me, I respect you, because you can cherry pick and take good things from every and anything. But one thing about me, I know most of the Muslim community, even going back to the old guard, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I still communicate with the brothers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at 64, go ahead, brother.
Yeah, you know, Islam, I was like one of the first brothers in my community to become Muslim. Like when I became Muslim, everybody on 17th Ave was still five sinners. You know, I didn't, you know, the brothers I grew up with, you know, they were still five sinners. I came in as a five sinner and I was, brother Imam Pasha used to come to the State County Jail. He gave me my Shahada and he taught me, you know, the Dan, and then I learned the Fatiha and, you know, a few short Torahs. But, you know, I was 17, 18 years old at that time. And one of the things that, you know, Islam is that, you know, you don't come into Islam right. You come to Islam to get right. So what people don't understand is that Islam is not predicated upon our intellect. It's predicated upon what Allah has prescribed for you through the Quran and that of his messenger, which is exemplified through his messenger, Muhammad, may the praise and salutations of Allah be upon him.
Right.
And this is all stemming with what we call aqidah, belief, and minhaj. So when people have the correctness of the belief system and the correct of the methodology, which is the minhaj, then that's when the application is being applied properly. But what happens is a lot of times we intellectualize Islam how we want it to be projected. And this, you know, through our own concepts and this and our own comprehension, and this is not the proper, you know, and I had to learn through, you know, years of study and, you know, come to recognize that knowledge precedes speech and action. So when you have the correct knowledge, then your speech, you know, propels that and your actions propel that. So, but in actuality, your actions come before your speech, you know, because once once you attain knowledge, now knowledge must be acted upon. And then once you act upon it, then only can you speak upon it. Then only can you give the wisdom upon it. You see what I'm saying? But then once you do that, you have to maintain through the encountering the hardship. Because I'm going to tell you something, brother. I've been Muslim since I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you know, I'm a practicing Muslim, and I have, you know, multiple wives. you know, this is the most difficult time in my Islam, in my life with my family, because of the westernized methodology of, you know what I'm saying, multiple wives and things of this nature. Our women have a really misconceived concept of this because of what they go through with the men in our communities now. Like, we're mistreating our women.
Right.
Mistreating them, man. And we don't realize that, you know, this mistreatment that we're doing to our women is something that's really poisoning not only the women but our children, because the
children,
women are the first
right.
teachers to our children. You
right.
see what I'm saying? They're
right.
the first teachers. And if we're not giving our women the proper knowledge, and that knowledge is not, it means nothing from your wisdom if your actions are not, you know,
not
showing
there.
This and manifesting this application. So
I agree with you.
You know,
one second.
Okay.
1 second. I don't mean to cut you off. I know this is the radio show, man. Oh man, it's great tonight. We got like 5 minutes. We only got like 4 minutes to go. Fast. I gotta let them promote
okay.
all this stuff real fast. So thank
yeah,
you
let's
for calling.
Go.
In.
My brother, was good talking
and,
to you.
And
keep the good words up, my brother. I appreciate you.
So, hey, listen, man.
Right.
I'd love to come and talk to you more anytime. Okay, just contact me.
Yes, sir.
I'll give you his information. He got his own show tomorrow night. He do it at 7 o'clock. I'll tell you about it, though.
Okay.
They call it Grown
okay,
Folks
cool.
Talking. It's the same phone number. Malau, look.
Okay.
We only got a
yes.
couple of more minutes left. So,
okay.
As soon as you say you got three wives, people start hitting me up. We didn't talk about that.
Oh,
we didn't talk about that. We talk about
oh,
that.
Man.
Look, what you want to promote? What, tell people about your nonprofit real quick. We got like 4
okay,
minutes.
Well, please, y'all, you know, I would appreciate any donations you could give to Community of United Focus Cuffs, where we do outreach work in the community. We feed the poor, as I was just telling you. We feed the community out here. We have a drug program, but our initial goal is to establish $68,000 in order to get a facility to which we can house women temporarily for 90 days, okay, who have been temporarily displaced from their homes, and also provide them with social aid and things like food stamps and other issues that they may have, child care and things of this nature. Also, we want to assist men who are and women who are incarcerated, you know, with finances and things of this nature. So please support us in that. Also, I have a book which has just been recently published, and you might, if you go on my Facebook page, you'll see it's, Point of Impact. Point of Impact, POI, Prisons and Incarceration, which I'm waiting on my publishing to go through right now so that me and my publisher can get this book out immediately. So we're about to do that also.
Tell them your Facebook page is what? What's your name? Tell them your Facebook page.
My Facebook page, you can go on my Facebook page to Derek Hansford. Now, there are a few other Derek Hansford, but you can recognize mine because you got a light-skinned, beautiful young lady kissing a bald-headed, handsome young man, and that's my sister kissing me. So if you see that, then you know that's me, okay? And Derek Hansford.
Okay.
But,
we only got 90 seconds. We only got 90 seconds.
Okay,
look.
Let me real y'all can check out Authentically Me out here in Norfolk. And E&M Barbershop Lounge, y'all come through and check us out on Lafayette Boulevard, 2517 Lafayette Boulevard in Norfolk, Virginia. Thank you, brother.
Before I let you go, I got to ask you something. I ask all my guests, and you got like 30 seconds to answer it. I ask all my guests
okay.
this year, Malau, it got 60 seconds. Is love real?
Oh, love is definitely real. Love is definitely real, man. And I'm going to tell you, like, yo, I want to give love to my sister Nikki, to my mother, to my family, my wives. But AJ, I want to give love to you, brother. You are a beautiful dynamite dude, and you always been a player. You played me tonight to get me on this show and show me this love. Hey man, I love you. This dude is. I was the king of women. This dude was a player for real, y'all. I'm talking about, listen, this dude. Listen, man. Hey, look. They used to say about 17 and a half brother that we were some handsome dudes, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah, yeah,
they used to
say
we used to
have
our business. Yo, hey man, I love you, man. This was really
I love you too,
beautiful.
Man. Yeah,
thank you.
I'll hit you tomorrow.
All right, man. Hey, look, man, I love you. Be safe, man. And thank you, everybody, right, for your support and your presence. Peace. Peace, baby. Peace. That was cool. Man.
In my bag till I pass out, wake up, do this shit again. Do it big, then I get little. No time for no fake friends. Stick with me, fuck a 360. I was taught to cut the middle men. Now I click out in DR. All the mommies yelling Theodore. More Dame than a Leor. All she really wanted Dior. Gray sweats in my Theodores. The ghetto Maida and me and more. I've been working, working, working. All she talk about is Birkin. Then the date she burping. All I'm thinking about is verses. I wrote this shit with a blindfold. All bullshit aside though. That's why they snuck out the side though. Look in my eyes with my eyes low. I can see you with my eyes closed. Needing no dough, I'm in grind mode. I'm trying to ball no Lonzo. Don't make me get blood in my poncho. Black mask and the Mac in the mill in the duffel bag. Bitch, I'm John Doe. I'm trying to cop me a condo. Ice in the face where the time go. If he flying, I ain't lying. All this gelato falling out the fronto. Far flowers, give me mine. While a nigga still alive though. Fuck how you feel. Why? We keep it realer than real. Food on the table, grab you a seat. Go eat you a meal. Money on money on money, street shit, fuck a deal. Money on money on money, street shit, fuck a deal. Fuck how you feel. Why? We keep it realer than real. Food on the table, grab you a seat. Go eat you a meal. Money on money on money, street shit, fuck a deal. Money on money on money, street shit, fuck a deal. Woke up early, I'm blessed, baby. Bell palsy, that's stress, baby. Bounce back, I'm a vet, baby. Kept it 100, nothing less, baby. 380, my favorite, baby. That Mac 10 with that X10. Hit your son, it'll leave your baby. RP, you should leave your baby. Tag the wrong one to beef with. Ever since they went vegan, baby. I'm just getting to the chicken. I'm just getting to the chicken. Milk the game, cheesing lately. Oh, your man fucked your best friend. Suck my dick and get even, baby. Use the mouth like you bleeding, baby. Team Patty, no secret lady, but if I bought it, you can keep it, baby. All day blowing la-la, my weed, the truth, best believe it, baby. Rapper slash actor, that's a side chick and a leading lady. Side chick want my dick, while my bitch want a new Mercedes. Yo, Rick's not my Rick, I'm a genius when I want a whip on my scissor shit. Yo, bitch is my bitch, that side bitch on my scissor shit. 1-2 when it don't stop till her skirt dropping my niggas hit. 1-2 when it don't stop till my top dropping my niggas hit. Fuck how you feel. Why? We keep it realer than real. Food on the table, grab you a seat. Go eat you a meal. Money on money on money, street shit, fuck a deal. Money on money on money, street shit, fuck a deal. Fuck how you feel. Why? We keep it realer than real. Food on the table, grab you a seat. Go eat you a meal. Money on money on money, street shit, fuck a deal. Money on money on money, street shit, fuck a deal.